Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And Happy New Year to everybody out there listening to LA Talk Radio tonight. And welcome back to Bobby Jean Bell, live and coming at you from Denver, Colorado. And this is LA Talk Radio, and we, of course, are The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina. And Bobby Jean Bell, of course, is in Denver tonight. She's going to some kind of a function.
A buying trip. Woohoo.
Oh, well then.
The annual buying trip for Out West.
Gotcha. So how was your New Year?
You know, I don't remember. Oh, you know what, Jim? Did you watch the Rose Parade from your new location in Idaho?
No.
Well, we did, because we love the Rose Parade, and I loved it as a kid on the East Coast. And then when we lived in the LA area, we actually lived in Pasadena for a while. We got to see it up close and personal. Loved it all those years with Stephanie and Bob Eubanks. And oh my gosh, it's not covered the same way in other parts of the country. Uh-huh. And that was kind of disappointing.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, Bob Eubanks and Stephanie, what was her name?
Stephanie Edwards.
Edwards. Edwards. Are they back? Because they were there for a long time, and now they weren't gone. They were gone.
They were gone and back. But I believe they're not on anymore. But you know, Channel 5 always ran it with no commercials, and they had the best seat in the house, and the station in Albuquerque, the whatever they were picking up, the cameras were way down almost to Green Street. Oh. And there were no equestrian units, hardly any bands. And so many commercials. It was just like, why am I watching this?
Well, yeah, and the only station it was available on up here was NBC, and commercials. I just said no.
So that was the one thing I remember from New Year's. But we had a good, you know, it was. We're looking at a new year, 2020. Can you believe it?
Absolutely. Wow. And the exciting part is tonight. We've got a great show lined up.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Do you know, I listened to the show from 2017 today in the car this afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. How could we do a better show?
Well, I think tonight is going to be better. So how about now, let's just see who our guest is.
From the great state that is Texas comes award-winning and New York Times bestselling author Paris Afton Bonds, joining us right here tonight on The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. So stick around. It's promising to be a great show.
So we, of course, have Paris Afton Bonds with us tonight on the phone. Paris, are you still with us?
Am I ever? And oh wow, what an introduction!
Was that like that?
Giant? Was that music, Bobby Jean? You know, was that music from Giant? I couldn't remember.
No, that music is Texas Rising.
Yeah,
from the miniseries.
Okay. Okay, but thank you. I feel honored.
as well you should, because, of course, we honor your presence on our little measly radio show.
Well, I was listening fascinated to you, what you did for New Year's Eve. Bobby Jean, I was in bed by 9, and it was spectacular.
Me too.
You too, Jim?
Me too.
Yeah, I think we were pretty early, too. Yeah.
The bad part was is that the fireworks started going off around 11:30. And my dog is this just gorgeous golden retriever named Bella, was whining. And finally, I just got up and got her in my bed with me so she could snuggle. And she was laying there shaking because they scare the bejesus out of her.
Oh, yeah. Most pets, they do.
Yeah. Yeah, but as long as she's up with Daddy and she got to be covered up with the blanket, and it kind of helped her settle down a little bit. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Sticking to it.
So the last time you were on, which was October of 2017, we were speaking about your new series that you had yet to be published.
Yeah.
And you had named it The Texicans.
Yes.
And well, it got published, and here we are. And Bobby
well,
and I
the first of the five books did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Brigands.
Well,
it's out now.
Well, yeah, and well, yeah, The Brigands is out, and that's the one we read. And
yay.
What a wonderful story. In fact, I think I told you in your review that I did for you that, oh my gosh, you just have this way of writing a story that includes everybody in it.
The good, the bad, and the ugly, huh?
Exactly, Bobby Jean. And well, Texas is so big, you've got a lot of history to cover there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so it's like, I'm so enamored of your writing, and mostly because, as I told you, that you draw people in. Your characters are so well done that you let the reader decide whether he wants to get involved with this character or not. It's up to him, and I really like that about the way you write.
Thank you so much. You had mentioned that I withhold a little bit and piecemeal it out, but honestly, when I'm on first draft, I cram too much at the front, and then second and third, I start extracting, scissoring away, and moving it around.
Uh-huh.
Do you do that? Do you do that with yours? Do you have everything up front?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do actually, and then I start meeting it out a little bit here and there and everywhere. But I actually, this is what I said in the review that I wrote for you, and I hope you don't mind if I read this on the air.
Oh, I'd love it.
It says, I titled it a solid Storytelling at Its Finest. Paris again hits another home run with her novel, The Brigands. From start to finish, Miss Bonds holds the reader in her grasp as she weaves and twists her way through her story. Again, as with other Afton Bonds books, I found myself enthralled by the simplicity and diversity of her storylines and her solid, unflinching character studies, allowing the reader as little or as much of the character as you wish. Hooray for Paris Afton Bonds, and I personally hope she continues writing for many years to come.
Oh, Jim, thank you. And that meant a lot to me coming from you.
Well,
I know you are involved with the West and Westerns. But more music, but I'm not familiar. Do you also write novels, novellas?
I don't. And the last time when we chatted, it was so fun listening to the interview from 2 years ago, because you, as Jim said, you mentioned this series, and now here it is. And the next one, I think, is slated to come out in May. And you asked me about writing, and I said I had this dream of putting a book together sort of based on the interviews on the Writer's Block. And 2 years have gone by, and I have not done a thing.
Naughty girl, but I hope you've been having a good time.
I have.
That's all that counts. And that's really the same with writing. Of course, you want fame and fortune, but really, it's following your passion. That's the only thing that's going to make you really happy.
Yeah.
Right, Jim?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to go totally with that.
I too really, really enjoyed this book. And as I was reading, ditto to everything Jim said so eloquently, what I thought was so interesting is, just in the first two chapters, which are fairly short, you give us the four main characters. We don't know that yet exactly, but you introduce them, and you just said, I do a whole lot up front. I pack it so much in, up front. And I didn't remember that from the last two books, but this time, it's like, oh, wow. Oh, we've already met. Oh, we met him, and and Sam Houston is there. Oh, that's interesting. And Austin has been mentioned, and we're just in the first I don't know, like what, Jim, like 10 pages?
Yeah, probably 10 or 15 pages. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a gal from Spain. We've got Alex in Texas. We've got an Irish, and they're all so different, and they all have secrets, don't they?
Well, yeah, you know what amazes me is that because I am a historian, and I mean, these names, you know, they grab you the first 10 or 15 pages, and mm-hmm. and so you can't quit reading because I got to see where they go from there, how they're intertwined into her story.
Yes. Didn't you wonder, Jim, are we going to actually go to the Alamo? Are we actually going to go to Goliad? Where is she going to take us with these big, huge events that are so iconic?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Is Alex going to go off? And is, you know, so yeah, you're right. If you know these events, even if you only know a little of these events, you'd be like, oh, what's gonna happen next, you know?
Yeah it's like how is she gonna get you there?
Yeah. And didn't you wonder right away about, because she introduces the Chaparral Fox, and we got a mole
intrigue
there,
going
you know?
On there,
is she gonna be a woman, is she gonna be a guy?
In the first 15 pages, you were mentioned that, you know, they're holding out in Goliad, and then that the Texican rebels are now sieging the Alamo. They have Holy Alamo under siege. And you're thinking, holy crap, right. That's a reversal of fortune, because they did that for a while, and, you know, until the Mexicans left, and then unfortunately came back. And
But I wanted to stress also that the I called it the Texicans, but it wasn't just, it was so many. It was the Germans, the Irish, the British, but it was the Tejanos too who fought.
The Tejanos right next to the Gringos, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right alongside. And I felt like they got left out of history there somewhat.
Oh, I think so much has been left out of history, and I think it continues to be a huge topic of research and discussion, and what was the real motivations, and like, what's really the story? It's another one of those huge events that you think there couldn't be anything more written by the academics, the historian, you know, that there couldn't be any more written about it, and then something will be revealed, and everybody's back to scrambling on, you know.
You know, then they dig up a flint pouch from the battle, and they go, oh, this must have belonged to David Crockett. This must have belonged to, and you go, oh, here we go again, you know.
Well, I did a lot of research traveling to places like, of course, like Alamo and Goliad, but San Jacinto as well. And I was amazed that no matter where you go and what language you're, whether it's Scandinavian or whatever language, Japanese, if you say remember the Alamo, that's something people know. You don't have to say anything.
Draw a line in the sand and remember the Alamo. They've taken on personalities all on their own. They stand in for lots of times when that's just the easiest thing to say is draw a line in the sand.
And that's taken on its own story now. I mean, mm-hmm. that's its own story within a story.
Right.
So, I mean,
exactly.
And, you know, one thing that's always amazed me, and especially in stories and historical quote fact close quote, is that history is always written by the winners.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, and so you're getting a lot of the Mexican side of what happened at the Alamo, and you can't get it from the American side or the Texan side because none of them lived through it. So really, I mean, Suzanne Dickinson and a few others, but mostly you're getting it from some of the letters and the journals written by the Mexican soldiers that were there, mm-hmm. which is, I think, where
there is their side.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of where the thing with Davy Crockett living through and was executed at the end of the battle. I think that's where that came from, was one of the soldiers wrote in his journal.
Right, and about apparently, from what I've read, his body was, you know, piled with the rest of the mm-hmm. corpses and mm-hmm. set on fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they set two or three piles and just burned them all.
Yep. Now, remind me, Harris, is there a family connection to this story for you?
No, there's.
Oh,
not.
Okay. I was thinking that there was some family history that you had. Not that these characters necessarily were from your family, but you had some connection.
I see what you're talking. See here, I've already lied starting out right at the first of your interview.
You're a writer. What can I say?
Yes, I've got literary license here to lie.
You do.
isn't that what's wonderful about being a writer?
I know. Isn't this just great?
And Bobby Jean, you're right. Going back through my husband's family, back to his ancestors, the original land that they settled in Robertson County, they still had, I think it was 360 acres. I don't remember how many. And it goes back to 1823. I don't remember now. But they still had 50 acres left out of all that. So mm-hmm. I felt compelled to write this story about the settlers of Texas.
Ladies, I'm going to have to cut you right there. We're going to do an ad for Out West.
Okay.
.com.
OutWestShop.com.
Okay.
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. This man and his wife loved serving others through the retail trade. One day, the man heard a voice whisper, "Go west." His wife did not hear the voice. The next day, the voice commanded, "Go west." And they did. And they found themselves in a new land, and it was good. And the voice said, "Open a business." And they did. And they called the business Out West, as that was where they were. And the voice said, "Invite authors and artists and musicians to Out West." And they did. And today that business continues to provide platforms for those with the creative spirit and great merchandise. And the voice exclaimed, "Use coupon code RADIO when you shop at OutWestShop.com." And the man and his wife, their friends and customers live happily ever after. Because it's always a great day out west.
Always got to get that in there, don't you, Bobby Jean?
Yeah.
But that makes me want to go shop at Out West.
Well, good. I think you should, Paris, because they got lots of stuff there.
Yeah.
In fact, if you talk to Bobby Jean, she'll probably carry your books.
That's what I was going to say. Well, do they have the brigands there? It's not.
Not yet.
I need to... A great idea, though. Thank you for suggesting that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, Jim, when I talked to you earlier, you told me that I could do a little bit of interviewing with you and Bobby Jean.
You can do that.
Understand?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Because we were talking about how you get a book started, and I wanted to know, do you know right off at the beginning what you want to do with the book and where you want it to go, and do you just sit down and start writing?
I know.
Or do you do a synopsis or an outline?
No, I'm a pantser. I know where it's going, and I know where it's going to end. And from there, each chapter kind of writes itself.
Okay. That's all you know, though, those two things.
That's
where
it.
Where it's going, well, you know, the path it's taken to the top of the mountain.
Right.
You know, but you don't know how you're going to get there.
Well, not always. And you know, as well as I do, Paris, that every book and every chapter has its own beat to it. And it's like there's a rhythm. There's a rhythm with dialogue. There's a rhythm with the story. There's a rhythm with each chapter, because each chapter has a start on its own and end on its own, leading to the following chapter. So, you know, chapters, I've read chapters that are 35 pages and I go, holy crap, I could probably get four chapters out of this.
So you prefer the shorter chapters, shorter paragraphs even?
I think, well, not always. I mean, there some paragraphs are kind of long, but I prefer more staccato. I prefer having a shorter chapter because it keeps the interest, I think, a little bit better. Much like your chapters are fairly short.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I find that I like to read at night, so I want to remember what I read, but if it starts getting really long chapters, I drift off the middle, and then I wake up the next morning and think, well, where did it go? Where did I go with it? But how did it end?
Exactly. Then you have to go back and start it again.
Well, I was going to ask Bobby Jean then, as a reader, do you prefer the short chapters, and or do you prefer more in-depth, elaborate
verbiage? That's a great question. I also do a lot of reading at night, even to read for this show. I find I have to set aside time at night, and so I can be tired, you know, so I often have to go back and reread. I have to, even though I have put a bookmark, you know, I still don't necessarily remember, and I have to start again.
Yeah.
You know what? I get caught up in the storytelling, and if it's short or long, it doesn't matter. If the story is engaging and compelling, and I'm intrigued by the characters or the action or whatever it might be, I will turn the pages regardless of whether I've gotten to the end of a chapter or I have several pages to get to the end of a chapter.
Are you allowed to say what you're reading now?
Yes. Well, let's see. I just finished your book 2 days ago. And I just received the book for next week, which I will actually start reading tonight. In my book bag, I actually have a book by Claire Fullerton, who has been a guest on the show way back a couple of times.
I love Claire.
I'm reading Dancing to an Irish Reel, Jim, which, you know, we read.
That was our first book that we read.
Yeah. But I belong to a local book club of ladies, and this year they asked me, everybody in the little clubs makes recommendations for the next year. And so I went in with a lot of recommendations and described, you know, like 7 different books. And I didn't know if they'd pick any of them. And they're like, oh, that dancing one to the Irish, that one sounds good. So I'm rereading it because of a book commitment. I also have in my stack, I have Elizabeth Strout's new book. I have a book called Winter Solstice that I'm only about halfway through that I'm really enjoying. So I sort of have an ongoing, because the commitment first off is the book for the week.
And so then do you switch between books?
Do I do what?
Do you find yourself going back and forth while you're between books?
The main commitment is the book for the week. And only if I've gotten it completed. And then I have, you know, 2 or 3 days before I receive the next book, then I go back to reading something, you know, that I have been wanting to read, I guess for pleasure, you know, reading something for pleasure. You know, we've been doing this show 5 years. This is show 240 or something. And Jim, remember,
wow,
we wondered if we could we do it? Could we read a book a week? And you said, Mr. Host of the show, we will read
a book a week,
you know, and you kind of develop a little muscle to be able to do it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think about it now. I will look to see pages, and if it's 450 or more, I get a little concerned about will I get to the end.
Well,
but if it's, you know, up to 350, I know I'm going to be able to get to the end.
Right, right. Well, like Richard and I read that one book that was like 620 pages, and I don't know how I got through it.
Yeah, you know, and we've also learned that in order to chat with an engaging author like you are, we don't necessarily need to have read the whole book. We need to have read enough of it to understand what's going on and the style and all. But you know what? We want to finish it because I've made a commitment of time to it, and I want to know what happens.
Well, exactly. But see, that brings up another question, Paris, and let me ask you. Now, I'm going to put my interview hat back on. So
okay.
Incidentally, did you get your margarita?
I wanted to be healthy, so tonight I am juicing a jalapeno with tequila.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Does that sound healthy?
Yeah.
Did you get your bourbon?
I had actually 2 of them for dinner, so I'm good to go.
Oh, okay. Good.
So let me ask you, because I know that a couple of the writers that we've asked this about, I mean, we get such varied answers. When you're writing a book, do you plan on it being X amount of pages, or you just write it until the story is through?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Probably the latter. I just write it until the story is through, and on the first draft, it's always – extremely short. I panicked because I think this is, you know, you really want to allow at least 70,000 words
sure.
if you're writing a novel. And, you know, I'll come up with 35,000 on the first draft and think, well, my career is over with. But going back on the second and third and fourth and fifth draft, I started expanding more.
You know, I found that some of the books we've read and a lot of that trend seems to be moving to shorter books down in the 250 to 265, 280 pages, 40 to 50, 60,000 words. I think maybe that's just a direct result of like War and Peace and Anna Karenina and, you know, All Quiet on the Western Front. You know, who can sit and read, 1,500 pages and stay interested in the story? I can't.
Well, I agree with you, but I worry also, is it a result of social media today?
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, and the whole mega, do it in 30 seconds, the whole.
Yeah,
I mean, that worries me. I don't think there is many readers out there. I hope I'm wrong, Bobby Jean. You belong to the book club. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I spent a little time on the Romance Writers of America website today. I had visited that the last time that we had you on. And the last time, the latest information they had was from 2013, and now they have some stats from 2017. And romance continues to be a very, very big piece of the publishing world, and with huge,
25%.
And the main readers are still, I think, like 83% women. I think the male quality, the number for male has gone up to like 18%. I think it was a little lower before. But it's 34 to 39 years old. And the number one way that they like to read is paper. It's not the e-reader. And I kind of thought, isn't that interesting? Because at that age, I'm like double that age, So I think the people at that age are choosing to read, in print.
Not the e-book, but the print, really.
Yeah. Right. And I thought that was very interesting. So I think sometimes we get in our tunnels, or we just think that we know, and it's really those kinds of surveys and things that help us get a broader. And I think they had used a base of 2,000 readers. I might have picked that up somewhere that they had queried, and I thought that was interesting because I would have expected.
Do both of y'all have a preference? Either of y'all?
I don't right now, but we'll talk about it right after the break, because right now we're going to take one. And,
all right.
Because we are on LA Talk Radio, and they are the best at what they do. And let's hear a little bit about them, Ronan.
Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown. You may look in vain for crosses and you'll never see a one, but sometimes between the setting and the rising of the sun, you can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as they answer to that roll call in the sky. Colonel Travis, Davy Crockett, and 180 more. Captain.
And we are back.
Marty Rockets.
We are back with our guest, Paris Afton Bonds, right here on LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block. And if you would like to sit and talk to Paris, The time right now is 7:34 on Pacific time. And if you'd like to call and talk to Paris tonight, and I certainly hope you do because she's one interesting lady, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And I have to tell you, Paris, I looked long and hard for that music for you.
I like that. Oh, my. I figured, though, that that was from Bobby Jean because she loves Western music. But you
That's
did.
From me.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
And you know what that is? That's the Ballad of the Alamo. That's from the opening of John Wayne's Alamo, 1960.
Oh, I remember seeing it. Did you see it?
Yeah. Robbins. Now, oh, I was going to say, who sung it? Well, somebody just Marty Robbins.
Marty Robbins.
Isn't he just the best?
Yeah, I did a whole hour of Alamo music, and that's one of the most famous, most beloved.
Yep.
My first book was inspired. I was listening to Marty Robbins' El Paso, and I've got to write a book around that. So, Sweet Golden Sun.
You know, El Paso... The Western Writers of America Association did a ranking of like the top 100 songs. And I don't know what their criteria was exactly, but I think El Paso was actually came in number one. Ghost Riders in the Sky and El Paso came
I think they tied.
In the top, three.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. And I love Ghost Riders in the Sky. Who did Ghost Riders in the Sky? I'm trying to remember.
Stan Jones wrote it. Von Monroe, Jim?
Monroe?
Oh my God! Everybody is so
and then
song.
Everybody, yeah. I mean, it's been
Johnny Cash even did it, didn't he?
Oh yeah.
It's been recorded by and it's been symphonic. It's been all instrumental. It's been
Roy Clark did it. I mean, you know, how much of a cover tune is that?
Yeah,
but I mean, let's talk about your writing for a minute, Paris.
Oh dear! All righty, I'll try not to lie.
This obviously it possibly came by you naturally. I don't know, but your writing is so smooth, and I think Bobby Jean would agree that it's when you're reading your books, it's just they flows. It just flows effortlessly from line to line, page to page, chapter to chapter, and that's a deal that every writer aspires to. But only I think a few could really make it, and I really have to applaud you because I'm sure new writers out there. Well,
it's not written effortlessly. It's that that blood, sweat, and tears proverb there.
Well, of course. You know, and I'm sure
I agonize over every word.
Oh, I do too. And you know, is this the right word? Did they actually say that?
Yes.
And I think. You have this uncanny ability, and I saw it so clearly here too, to create characters that we want to be, or we want to be with that one.
Yeah, definitely want to know. Yeah.
Like Jim, would you want to be Alex or Neil?
I'm going to go with Alex.
but Neil's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they're both cool. You know, ladies, we have Rafaela, and we have Fiona, right? Did I get the names right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I want to be Fiona. Oh, I don't know. I like that Rafaela. Oh, she's pretty cool thinking about that. She, you know, and you give those two ladies each sort of a secret about something in their past, you think, I don't want to give it away, but you think that the one that's not a virgin anymore is not the one that you think it would be. It's like, what?
Yeah. I tried to go against stereotyping there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or cast typing, I guess.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you, now with a detail like that, did you have that in your mind from the very beginning, or did you just go, you know, I'm just going to suddenly hear it. Here she has this thought, or this is going to come out in this dialogue, or like, did you know their backstory before?
No, very little.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Bobby Jean, very little. And yet, I angst every day over what I'm going to write. I don't know what's going to happen. And I know that I just have to, and this sounds so trite, but let the characters speak to me and tell their own story. Mm-hmm. So, but I truly, I'm biting my nails and sweating blood when I approach the computers in the morning.
Yeah, I do the bullet sweat too. I mean, I do allow my characters to dictate the storyline. Because once you know absolutely. Once you get to know your characters real well, especially in a series, you know where they're going, you know how they talk, you know, and so they kind of dictate where the story's going to go. I mean, you can give them a start and finish and let them tell the story in between.
I was going to ask you when Bobby Jean mentioned belonging to the book club. As far as reading, do you have, once you finished your first or second or third draft, do you have beta readers that you
I actually don't. Well, I don't actually have beta readers per se. There's a few friends I send them to.
And before they read, put
yeah,
it out before, there at all.
Oh, yeah. And I do get feedback, you know.
Does it sting?
Well, yeah. You know, they said, well, you know what? You can get rid of the fourth chapter because it really doesn't do anything. Oh, okay.
Harris, do you use readers like that that are, besides maybe your editor, are you having others read the books as you go along?
No, I am so terribly sensitive that I just finish it up after, you know, 10, 12 drafts, however many it takes, and send it to the editor. I just don't take criticism well. And, you know, those reviews that come in on Amazon. That's when I want to go get the margarita and the jalapeno.
Well, now I have to tell you, Paris, that PDF I sent you for Jefferson's Chance,
yes,
that was not the final copy. So
in effect,
were a beta reader for me.
Mm. Well, I didn't know that.
But Bobby Jean, she liked Mikey liked it.
But of course.
Oh my gosh! I believe this character really existed, Bobby Jean. And
I know. I did.
I started doing research looking, so disappointed when I realized.
I did too. And his Custer book. His Custer book was like that too. I thought I know a lot about Custer and all the participants and all. Who is this guy? And it was it's like, wait, how can that be? Because he grounds it so well, and he writes. If it's in the first person, it's the period is correct. You know, everything that person is seeing and touching and all is also, you know, is there correctly. That's
so vivid that they have to exist, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. And I had another thought, and Jim, we haven't talked about this in a really, really long time, but it occurred to me a couple days ago as I was just sort of thinking back over this book. Do you remember, Jim, we had an author or an editor, and you and I really weren't familiar. They were reading specifically to look for sensitivity
issues. I remember, but I don't remember who it was.
And it was kind of, I was sort of embarrassed that I didn't know, here I am on this show, and really that was new to us. And I think that's kind of going on more and more, and I wondered if anybody in the romance genre was using, it's kind of like an editor, but they're reading specifically.
Well, sensitivity readers.
Sensitivity. Was that the,
yeah.
Sensitivity readers. So they're looking for things having to do with ethnicities or gender, or to be sure that the wording is correct.
Well, let's be fair. Okay. No one in Paris's books gets out alive. At the end of the book, there's no virgins left. No, nothing.
Yes, the land was ripe there. That sensitivity, though, I think, I don't know if this is what you're talking about in a sense, but the RWA is just having problems with sensitivity and inclusion now that we're trying to deal with, and it may be a bigger problem than we had anticipated.
That could have been. I don't recall. I recall the subject matter. I do not recall the show or the writer that was on.
Yeah, but it was really interesting. And actually, you know, whoever we were talking to had to go back and rewrite things and kind of go back to research and go, you know, and it was fiction. It was a work of fiction. But anyway, we haven't talked about that in a long time. But I thought, you know, when you're writing about a historical period and you've got lots of different ethnicities being portrayed and all, like, how do you make sure you're being sensitive to all of those issues that would come up, you know, potentially could come up?
And yeah, that's a good point. We're going to hear you getting ready.
That is a good point.
Whether to why did be you title true this? To the period.
Yeah.
To be true to the period or to be sensitive to the
well, that's
the present.
Part of the challenge. That's part of the challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
You're walking a thin line, but being a writer, you're always opening yourself to you know, being a subject of what should I say, your discussion. I know a friend of mine was wanting to write, and he said, and he's a good writer, and I said, well, go ahead and write it and put it out there. And he said, no, you know, I would be too upset to think of everyone reading my words. And I'm so what is your take on that, Jim? I mean, does that bother you at all after all these books?
No, I don't think it bothers me like that. I think it sometimes I get people telling me that, oh, well, you know, you're jumping from time period to time period, and I have to go back and look. And but I don't think I ever worry about people, you know, mistaking my words or calling my words. No, I don't think that's an issue with me.
Or their view. Well, back to the review.
Well,
do reviews bother you?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I've had a couple really crappy reviews, and you know, you just live through them. It's you know, you're not going to please everybody, and not everybody who picks up your book is going to like it. So
exactly right. Mm-hmm.
So I go with the people that do like it, and you know, it's like when I'm writing, like we talked about a little earlier, is that I know where I'm going to go to start with, and I know where the story's going to end. Well, in the case of Jefferson's Chance, I changed the ending because I didn't think it was a story that he should have lived through.
And I disagree. I want more books with him.
I know you want to go Jefferson.
I'm with you, Bobby Jean.
Bring him back.
The whole story was about Jefferson's chance to be a Texas Ranger and sent on a fool's errand only to wind up not so much a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. And the story is that he comes out of it not a hero, but an honest to God Texas Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I loved that book. And I also like Jonah Blue.
Jonah Blue.
The mountain man. Yeah.
Yep. Rocky Mountain Free Trappers.
Well, the hardest part for me in writing is not the beginning or the end. It's the climax that is right there before the end. And that is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where I really sweat the blood.
Yeah, well, I think we all do. And in where are you going to put it? You know, how far into your book are you going to? You know, I've heard writers going to say, well, next to the last chapter.
And how do you slowly reveal things that need to be revealed? And do you forget and not reveal something that people, when they get done, they go, but what about, but who the heck was the Chaparral Fox? You know, I mean, like, you know.
It's also sure like, you know, hit your climax, and then there's another little surprise halfway through the next chapter. That's what makes this fun.
I was curious, Paris, why, how you came up with the name for this book as The Brigands. What?
And all of the five books, they're the B words. They're the brigands and the barons and the bravados and the betrayers and the banshees. I started out with the barons because so many barons came to Texas during that period that Mexico opened it for settlement.
Right.
But the story enlarged the second book around, and I knew it had to be the Barons instead. I have the Barony, which is a takeoff, really, on the King Ranch. So that's in the second book.
Well, ladies, once again, I must go to commercial, so if you'll hang tough, we'll be back with you in just a minute. And, you know, if you're looking for a publicist and you don't know where to go, I'm going to tell you, try Creative Edge in Canada, Mickey Mickelson. He is one hell of a guy. And we'll just let the rest of it go with our commercial.
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you could find them at www.creative-edge.services.
And that's for Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge. And I really believe in Mickey, and actually I'm one of his clients. So there you have it. And so back to our conversation. We're on LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block, talking to Paris Afton Bonds, the New York Times bestselling award-winning author, who is Paris Afton Bonds.
Who is sweating blood even now. I'm really anytime rather be writing than talking. So thank you all for making it easier here.
Well, that's we strive to do that. We made a deal that when Bobby and I first sat down and talked about this show, we wanted to make sure that it was very easy for writers to talk about it.
You're doing it. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
I don't think I'm going to pass out. Okay.
But we also realize with some writers, they love talking about themselves. So we have to give them the format to be able to do that and us be able to have the lasso on them a little bit. So, but we haven't needed one with you, so there you go.
So you're not tightening the rope and yanking me off?
No. We love you, Paris. You know, in fact, I was sitting, I was kind of following what you were doing this winter. Of course, you can't help it because you're all over Facebook. And I was looking, and all of a sudden, I see that you're up there skiing. I said, what?
Bobby Jean, I was in Colorado there. I was in Winter Park, not far from you. Yeah. I was snowmobiling and skiing and tubing, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
She says all day.
You're very active because there's a great picture of you on a boat too. You really have an adventuresome life.
I do. I like staying busy. I like staying active, and it's too easy, as you know, Jim, to be a recluse and a hermit if you're a writer. So I force myself to get out and play tennis or run, walk, whatever, rollerblade. It's important. And a lot of times I'd rather stay and write, but I know I need to get out. Do that.
You also got five boys, and that'll keep you busy up until the time they leave home.
Well, I'd like to say that they're starving and they have malnutrition, so please go out and buy my book, okay?
But writing, you have to write, don't you, Paris? I mean, you have to write. There's like nothing that gets in the way of writing.
Bobby, you nailed me. Yes. Every day... 7 days a week, I don't feel complete unless I come in and write something. Mm-hmm. It's a compulsion. And I also teach classes about writing. And I tell people, if you want to be a writer, you do have to read a lot. Mm-hmm. But you also have to be compelled to write, like the devil's got a hold of you, and you know you can't let loose of you. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the devil way, can Jim? Do it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The devil like breathing. Can do it.
It's like breathing. You can't not breathe. I mean,
it's my passion. I am so lucky to get to do what I want, and also to be paid to do what I want. How lucky is that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's pretty damn lucky.
So 2 years ago, you had these five books ready to go, but you were under negotiations, and now we see that they're out. So it's been two years. So what have you got cooking? What have you been doing for the last 2 years?
besides rollerblading, sailing, running, snow skiing.
I've had three books come out. Uh-huh. I had Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves come out, and I had, Monarchs and Painted Ladies, and then I've got a book coming out this month called Doorway to the Moon. And I'm working on a book called right now with a title of a working title of Rio Grande.
Where will that be taking
place? This is my life. My life is boring.
Mine is too, so don't feel bad. I just sent you the two books. Three. I sent you Long Ride to Morning, which you're going to love. It's about two young cowboys. I think you're going to really dig it. Out of Texas, actually. And I sent you The Return, which is two full stories into one. And I think it's a little supernatural. And then I sent you.
Is that a change for you? Yes. Getting some supernatural?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He hasn't done that too much, but when he has, it's been riveting.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Oh. And tell me that riveting. Name. What was that one?
The Return.
Mm hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you won't be able to put it down. Don't read it in the dark. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't read it in the dark again. the first half called Dark Angel.
The Dark Angel
is a little scary, but not real bad until you get into the Return second half of the book, where it really starts getting strange.
Or I suggest that you do dim the lights, you pour a glass of wine, and you listen to the soundtrack of Carmina Burana in the background.
There you go. There you go.
That sounds good to me. Or I can mix up my health drink. Yeah. Juice up my health drink here.
And I also sent you a copy of my book of poetry called That's All You Get. And it's the poems that I wrote from 1967 to 1983.
Wow.
Music. Poetry. Well, it's also musical lyrics too. So.
It's what lyrics?
I also was a musician for a lot of years, so there's a lot of lyrics from songs that I wrote in there as well.
Jim, is there anything you haven't done?
Yes, I don't roller skate. I
don't ice
skate.
Okay.
Paris, is that how you and Bobby hooked up, because you're both interested in music?
I was on her second Buckaroo Bookstore at the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
As an author, and then you used to come on the Around the Barn radio show, right. And I would interview you as one of our primary guests, and then he got that dream to have his own show.
Yep, that's me.
And you've had your own show. See, I don't know this much about you, Bobby Jean. You've had, it looks like, a lot of shows over the years. Is that right?
Well, I've been blessed. The first show was Around the Barn, and I was a co-host. And it was a wonderful show, as we were on, I don't know, 3 or 4 years every Saturday morning in my community of Santa Clarita. And we interviewed equestrians and authors and musicians, and it was great fun. And then for the last going this month, I went into my sixth year with a show called Campfire Cafe out of Nashville radio show, where we interview musicians the first hour and play their music as much as possible and interview them live. And then the second hour, we talk to an equestrian or somebody that's having an equestrian event, like the Mustang Makeover, or we talked to somebody from the Mustang Heritage Foundation, or from a guest ranch, or from a Mule Days, or, you know, something like that. And then I do the Writer's Block with Jim. And then I have my own show that's just all music, create my own playlist and put it together. And that's called the Out West Hour. And I just celebrated my first.
You're following your passion.
There you go. And right now, ladies, we got to call it. We are out of time.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
alrighty.
So, Paris, you made it through. You didn't pass
out. Yay, I didn't pass out. Yay.
Good girl.
Thank you so much for being nice to me, both of you.
You're so welcome. And thank you for joining us. And you can find Paris at parisaftonbonds.com. And that's the best place to go to find her. And a lovely lady, buy her books. Her sons are starving to death. Thank you again, Paris.
Bye-bye, you two. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And I'm kind of in a hurry tonight. So right now, for next week, we have Nancy Quinn. She's a wildlife artist, and she's an ex-Army wife and an author. And her book is called Go West, Young Woman. And it should be interesting because it's all true stories. And with that being said, sorry to hurry you out of here, Bobby, but it is late. And for myself and for Bobby Jean Bell and Russ Avison and the Writer's Block and Hall, we are out of here.